Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Stars of the Golden Age, a show that highlights the lives of legends from film, music, and the birth of television during Hollywood's Golden Age and the few years surrounding it. I am your host, Erin Carlson. Today, we will be talking about the one, the only, Clark Gable. The man who was crowned as the King of Hollywood in 1937 and kept that title for the rest of his life. A special thank you to a special listener, Neely, for pushing me to cover Clark Gable finally. He was probably the second person on my list for future subjects when I very first began this wild podcast journey. But I've been putting it off because, well, mostly because I didn't want to learn things that I didn't want to know. And also, I want to save a lot of heavy hitters for the hopeful years to come of this podcast. But time to get myself out of Denial City and share Mr. Gable's story with you. So thank you, Neely, for this little nudge to do so. A quick thank you to a new Patreon member, and then we'll dive in. Thank you so much to Kristen for supporting the show on Patreon. If you are interested in learning about the special perks that Kristen will now get over on Patreon, listen at the end of the show and learn how you can get in on the fun. Thanks again, Kristen. Okay, here we go. This will actually be a two-part episode because there is just so much I want to share about the life of Clark Gable. So we will start off with his life this week, and then I will share the conclusion next week. William Clark Gable was born on February 1st, 1901, in Cadiz, Ohio. He was the only child for parents Will and Adeline, an 11-pound newborn child. Clark Gable actually came close to never even being born. His mother suffered from a heart condition and seizure disorder, and her doctor had urged her to go under surgery to relieve some of her symptoms. But she was already pregnant, and the surgery would require the termination of her pregnancy. Remember, this is in the year 1900. She refused to have her pregnancy aborted. She was willing to sacrifice her own health for her unborn child. The future internationally super-duper famous Clark Gable was named after his father because William Sr. did not think that Clark was masculine enough. So they compromised and gave their son the middle name of Clark. And as it turned out, going by the name Clark down the road in life did nothing at all to hamper his masculinity. The word compromise may not be an accurate description of how Will and Adeline settled on their only child's name. Will was a dominant and controlling husband. Adeline had very, very little say in their marriage. Will was a pretty absent husband and father, but his word always ruled regardless. When Will wasn't at work in the oil fields, he was out drinking, gambling, and sleeping with other women. Having a less-than-stellar husband, Adeline was so happy to have her little boy. She found true, unconditional love when she held her baby for the first time. It is an incredible blessing that she had this, because Adeline died when William Clark, her only child, was only 9 months old. Adeline Gable died from epilepsy at only 31 years old. Clark Gable would never remember the brief time with the mother who loved him so much. Will left baby Clark with Adeline's parents and left town immediately after his wife's death. 18 months later, he was remarried and returned to claim his son, who was now living with Adeline's brother and his wife. They begged Will to let little Clark stay with them. They didn't have children of their own, and they loved the little boy so much. As far as 2-year-old Clark was concerned, they were his parents, and they were a very happy little family. Will, likely from a place of power and control, took his son from the only family he'd ever known and moved him far away from them to live with him and his new wife. Luckily, Clark's new stepmother, Jenny, was a loving figure in his young life. Jenny made sure that Clark always had the biggest and best birthday party of any boy in town and had the best gifts. In fact, Clark Gable was the first child to own a bicycle in their small town. Will, like in his marriage to Adeline, was not around much in his marriage to Jenny. So Jenny was by far the primary caregiver to Clark, which was a good thing. She nourished his childhood with art, music, and literature. She encouraged him to try out for school plays. She taught him how to play piano. And she taught him the importance of good manners and consideration for others. Father Will did not like that his son was being taught any of these things. He wanted his son to get into brawls, be inconsiderate to women, strive for a future in manual labor, and absolutely not participate in school plays. Clark Gable was a very tall boy and had a strong physique. He was very athletically gifted, partly due to his physique. And he played baseball, ran track, and was on the swim team. This helped a little with his acceptance from his father, but Will was still very vocal about his disapproval of his son's courteous personality, gentle nature, and well-groomed appearance. Character traits most parents would love in a child. Will despised it all. He wanted a tough and rugged son who fought his way through any obstacles that came his way. When Clark was 15 years old, his father decided it was time to relocate to another town once again. He left his job, bought a farm, and moved the family from everything they had known. Farm life, of course, meant a lot of hard work. Clark was now expected to get up at 4 a.m. every morning to do farm chores, and he hated it. He decided to leave home and start a life on his own. Clark Gable left this new home on the farm at 16 years old and left school and moved to Akron, Ohio with a friend in hopes of securing work. He found work at a rubber company and soon he found so much more. Clark had never seen a movie before. It was 1916 when he moved to Akron, so it's not as if motion pictures had been around very long. But there weren't any Nickelodeons in the small farming town where Clark had lived in. He fell in love with moving pictures and loved to go to the theater to see the latest Western films. And he saw plays, too. That's what really enticed him. So much that he wanted to get his feet onto one of those stages. But he'd have to be patient as far as that went. Clark Gable's first job in show business was as an errand boy for the local theater company. After a while of learning the ropes behind the scenes, Clark finally got his chance to be on stage in a walk-in role with one line, "Good evening, sir." Clark lived at the theater, literally. He slept there and showered at the local YMCA. Young Clark Gable was all in for a future as an actor. But then, his dreams were interrupted before he could even begin working towards them when his stepmother Jenny became ill in late 1919. Clark rushed home to be with her, and he was with her when she died a couple months later. "I lost my best friend," Clark later recalled. He was only 18 years old, and he'd lost another mother. Clark's father, Will, relocated to Tulsa, Oklahoma after his second wife died, and Clark reluctantly joined him to work in the oil fields there. This was a life Clark never wanted for himself, and he was going to make sure that he didn't get stuck in it. A $300 payout on his 21st birthday, left to him by his grandfather, is what allowed Clark to leave the life of hard manual labor and get back on track with the future he strived for. That $300 would adjust to about $5,700 today. That was a lot of money for a young man like Clark Gable. He took the money and booked it to Kansas City, where he joined a traveling tent show as part of the set design crew. His dad sending him off by calling him a big sissy and telling him to not bother ever coming back. Father and son would always have a very strained relationship. Clark's next chapter brought him to Oregon. He took on a series of jobs while he set his sights on getting involved in the local theater community. In June of 1923, 22-year-old Clark Gable met 39-year-old stage actress Josephine Dillon. She was in Portland looking for acting talent for her new theater troupe. Clark auditioned, and Josephine accepted him. This was a very significant point in Clark Gable's life and career. Clark was all in for the acting instruction that he was being offered by Josephine Dillon. And Josephine Dillon took an immediate liking to Clark and his natural charisma and drive. He had close to zero experience on the stage, and he was willing to put all of his energy into learning everything he could about being a great actor. Clark told Josephine he wanted to be a movie star, even though she was a Broadway actress. She told him that he could achieve his dreams if he put in the work. First, learn, then practice, and then practice some more. She told him she would teach him how to, quote, walk, talk, and breathe all over again. One of the first things Josephine coached Clark through was his voice. He had a pretty high-pitched voice, and she trained him how to lower it. Next was his appearance. His once strong physique had diminished a bit, so Josephine helped him build up his athletic body again so he could take on strong leading man roles. Clark had been working as a lineman for the telephone company, but Josephine got him a different job on a farm so he could bulk up those muscles in a hard manual labor way. And he didn't like working on the farm. The Clark Gable being molded by Josephine Dillon was actually pretty unrecognizable from the Clark Gable we all know from the silver screen. He had a wide gap between his two front teeth. All of his teeth were pretty rough looking. His eyebrows were so thick and bushy that they dominated his entire face. And his dark hair was parted in the center and slicked tightly to the sides. And, of course, his famously large protruding ears and his large hands. He wasn't bad looking, but he definitely wasn't super stud Rhett Butler. Clark Gable was actually engaged during this time. It had been a very long engagement with a young actress named Franz. When she came to visit him under Josephine's leadership, he broke off their engagement under a cloud of mystery. Franz never did marry during her lifetime. She held on to Clark Gable as her one and only love. The one who got away. Josephine closed her drama school so that she could put 100% of her focus and attention on her prized student, Clark Gable. She was the new mother figure in his life, 17 years older than him. She completely managed his life. Soon, she got Clark a position in the Forrest Taylor Stock Company in Portland so he could put his acting training to work and hone in his skills, while Josephine went to L.A. to establish a new life for them there. And then, in the summer of 1924, Josephine took Clark to the grand land of Hollywood. Why was Josephine Dillon putting so much energy into this one of many young men that were in her company? Well, that question may be answered with the next thing I'm about to say. Shortly after arriving in Hollywood together, 23-year-old Clark Gable married 40-year-old Josephine Dillon. Clark Gable was very dependent on Josephine Dillon, and Josephine Dillon was obsessed and infatuated with Clark Gable. She wrote of the relationship, quote, "When I didn't love him, I was better off. He's become my life, my whole world, my reason for working 18 hours a day. He makes me laugh, he makes me young. He makes my heart sing in the morning and dance while I sleep. If he only knew the wonderment of it, and how much joy came into my life when he walked into my studio. But he mustn't know. I might frighten him away. Though I find he needs me, and will for a long time." End quote. The relationship wasn't a particularly healthy one, in my opinion at least. Clark must have realized this too, because there are accounts of him feeling molded and controlled very soon after the marriage began. He was in the grand land of Hollywood now, surrounded by glamour, excitement, and beautiful women. And he felt trapped. He was secure with a roof over his head and food on the table, but he felt like all of his freedom had been ripped away. He increasingly spent more and more time away from home, grasping at what he could of his personal freedom. He recalled of his marriage, quote, "I'd come home and she'd start teaching. I wasn't walking right. I wasn't breathing deeply. Or I entered the room all wrong. My voice was too high. She never did anything but teach, teach, teach." End quote. Newly married Clark Gable wasn't about to become an instant star in Hollywood. He tried, and maybe that's what happened to the luckiest of Hollywood newcomers, but it wasn't going to be quite that easy for Clark Gable. He took what he could, though, and that meant quite a bit of extra work. His first actual part was in the 1924 film White Man. It was a bit part, which paid just $15 per day of work, but it was a Hollywood movie role. After a couple of more small roles and a lot of extra work, Clark gravitated more and more back to the theater. On the stage with the West Coast Players, he was becoming quite a good actor and was able to keep steady employment, working on productions with some big names too, like Lionel Barrymore. Employment wasn't as important to him as it would have been if he was on his own, since his wife was spoiling him rotten, but he still really wanted to achieve success as an actor and maybe gain some independence. It wasn't long before this odd couple was estranged, and Clark went to Houston for stage work and then New York. Clark Gable's Broadway debut was in September of 1928. He stayed in New York for 2 years, starring in several productions. The West Coast Players lured him back to LA in 1930 to do a play. It was his biggest stage hit to date, and that sent film studio talent scouts and agents running his way. But he was no longer interested in being a movie star. He wanted to return to New York and become a Broadway star. That is, until talent agent Minna Wallace found him. She was frank and real and assertive, and Clark liked that. On the very day he met her, she secured him a movie role in The Painted Desert that paid $750 per week, or $14,500 per week today. The transition from New York back to Hollywood wasn't the only change that occurred in Clark Gable's life in 1930. That year also brought the official end to his marriage to his acting coach turned wife, Josephine Dillon. It's unclear what exactly were the motives behind this marriage of Clark Gable and Josephine Dillon. There are many different theories out there. Many claimed that she was a lesbian and the marriage was never the typical loving kind of marriage. Many believe that Clark married Josephine to ensure better opportunities in his budding acting career. Many also believe that Josephine was a meal ticket for Clark. And of course, there is the surrogate mother theory. As for the ending of their short marriage, some believe that he left her once he was a Kier in Hollywood film roles. Others believe he left because he was in love with another woman. Who knows the whole truth, but it is certain that Clark was having an affair while married to Josephine. We know this because he immediately married that woman. Still, Josephine Dillon insisted on being called Mrs. Clark Gable for the rest of her life. Freshly divorced, 30-year-old Clark Gable married his second wife, three times married, 47-year-old Texas socialite Rhea Langham, in June of 1931. Another older woman. Again, I'm sure we can analyze that a bit against losing two mothers so young. Clark also became the stepfather to Rhea's two children. Agent Minna Wallace was working hard to get work for her new client, Clark Gable. Better yet, a studio contract. She got him a screen test at Warner Brothers, but Jack Warner laughed at seeing Clark Gable and saying something along the lines of, "What the hell am I going to do with a guy that has ears like that?" Jack Warner couldn't believe his eyes when he later saw that big-eared man and it happened one night. There is talk that his ears were later pinned or that he had cosmetic surgery to minimize the look of them. And he also had his less-than-perfect teeth temporarily capped during this time. One of the fancy dinner parties that his socialite wife Rhea drug Clark to brought with it an introduction to MGM Vice President of Production, Irving Thalberg. Thalberg thought Clark Gable would be perfect for a small part in MGM's upcoming film, The Easiest Way. Once the film was released, he knew MGM had star material on their hands, and Clark Gable was offered a one-year contract with the studio, with a $650 per week salary. He was now under contract with what was becoming the biggest dream factory in Hollywood, MGM. The experience he picked up on Broadway really paid off as he found his way in his first MGM films. His first roles typecast him as a lot of criminal-type characters. That changed when he starred alongside Joan Crawford in Possessed in 1932. Joan Crawford said of Clark Gable, quote, "He was a king wherever he went. He walked like one, he behaved like one, and he was the most masculine man that I have ever met in my life," end quote. In a different interview, she said, quote, "We were attracted to each other instantly. I had what he wanted, and he had what I wanted. Call it chemistry, call it love at first sight, or physical attraction. What's the difference? The electricity between us sparked on the screen, too. It wasn't just acting. We meant every damn kiss and embrace. God, we both had balls in those days. He had more animal magnetism than any man in the world. And goddammit, every woman knew it," end quote. Joan Crawford and Clark Gable starred in 8 total films together. And as you can probably conclude from Miss Crawford's words, they engaged in a spicy love affair. Joan Crawford fell passionately in love with Clark Gable, and they even toyed with the idea of divorcing their respective spouses and getting married. But Louis B. Mayer would not allow it. If they got married, they would both be instantly fired from MGM. In fact, if they continued their affair at all, they would be fired. So they just continued in secret for a while. A long while. They would fall back into each other's arms for years and years to come. Clark Gable was kept pretty busy in his new MGM contract. Aside from Possessed in 1932, there were a couple of other films that stood out that year as significant in his life and career. Red Dust with Jean Harlow, and No Man of Her Own with Carole Lombard. Red Dust paired up Clark Gable with Jean Harlow for the first time in what would be a total of 6 films together, including what would be her last film, Saratoga. It likely would have been many more had she not died so tragically young. No Man of Her Own held significance because it was the one and only film in which he co-starred with Carole Lombard. I'm sure most of you know this, but spoiler alert, he marries her. And I'm sure most of you also know this, but spoiler alert, she also dies tragically young. Red Dust showed Clark Gable's versatility as an actor and acted as a turning point in his career and path to superstardom. By 1933, he was being paid $2,000 per week by MGM, which would be almost $50,000 per week today. In 1934, the studio agreed to lend him out to Columbia for It Happened One Night. I love that movie. Well, so did everyone else. It was a smash hit and became the first movie to win the Big Five at the Academy Awards. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Writing, Best Actress for Claudette Colbert, and Best Actor for Clark Gable. To date, only 2 other films in history have achieved this great achievement since 1934's It Happened One Night. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in 1975, and Silence of the Lambs in 1991. So it is a really, really great accomplishment. Clark Gable was officially a superstar. Clark Gable's life at MGM was busy. It wasn't all just about making movies. It was about creating an image. That was Louis B. Mayer's biggest priority for his stars. 6 days per week, Clark Gable was to report to the studio at 6 a.m. to work on his recreation. He would work out in the gym, do some shooting practice, learn how to fish, and perfect his horse riding skills. And lots of photo shoots. MGM wanted Gable to know how to hunt, fish, and shoot a gun so he could live up to the man's man image that they so desperately wanted the public to maintain of him. MGM completely recreated him to their liking, just like Josephine had done. But it's a good thing Clark Gable actually enjoyed all of these things, the hunting, the fishing, the horse riding. He loved it all except for the photos. He hated posing for pictures. The studio also arranged to have all of his teeth pulled, most of which were rotting, and he was fitted for dentures. He actually developed a very severe gum infection prior to having his teeth pulled. His oral hygiene wasn't the greatest. His absence during this time was announced by MGM as an appendectomy. So many Golden Age stars had so-called appendectomies. It was the go-to cover-up for cosmetic surgery, secret births, and abortions. Clark Gable was envied by men for his cool masculinity and drooled over by women for the same reason. His cool demeanor seemed accessible. He was a man's man, but also very put together and had impeccable manners when he needed to use them, thanks to his stepmother Jenny and his current socialite wife Rhea. He seemed like a real man, a kind, cool, charming, real man. And this made him a very popular figure. Clark was flying high in Hollywood, but his second marriage was souring just as quickly as the first had. It didn't help that he took advantage of this desirability from women and engaged in multiple affairs. Not just with Joan Crawford, but other co-stars like Jean Harlow and Loretta Young. In fact, rumors circulated later that the child Loretta Young had adopted in 1937 was actually her biological child by Clark Gable. Loretta Young publicly denied this for her entire life, although her daughter said she had told her this truth in private. Loretta Young's posthumous memoir comes clean with this truth, that her daughter Judy was also the daughter of Clark Gable. Clark and Rhea became estranged just a couple of years into their marriage. But Rhea grasped onto this marriage desperately. She loved her role as Mrs. Clark Gable, and the avenues opened up to her as being the wife of a movie star. She knew that her husband was having affairs. She just signed it off as common practice in Hollywood. She could accept this behavior as long as he was somewhat discreet, just so she could hang on to that role as Mrs. Gable. But Clark was miserable. Not helped by the fact that Rhea had moved Clark's father out to LA and forced Clark to support him. He and his father had never been close, and he did not want him in his life. It all just became too much for Clark. He and Rhea got divorced in 1939 after 7.5 years of marriage, much of that estranged. This second divorce was also pushed along in the same manner the first had been, with the fact that Clark Gable was in love with another woman. Not Joan Crawford, there was a new exceptional woman in his life. A woman who would become his most famous romance, Carol Lombard. And also, just like the transition period after his first divorce, Clark married his new love almost immediately. Clark Gable and Carol Lombard were married on March 29, 1939, just a few months after his divorce from Rhea Langham was final. Third time's a charm? Well, this relationship was different in many ways. First off, Carol Lombard was actually a few years younger than Clark Gable. His first two wives had been substantially older than him. Second, he was a successful Hollywood actor by now and making a really good living. He didn't need a rich wife to support him. This marriage seemed to actually be centered around love. Clark Gable finally found a true, real love. The newlyweds purchased a 20-acre ranch in the San Fernando Valley. It was very private and very secluded, just what they wanted. Some of you may have caught on that I love details of homes. And author Jane Ellen Wayne was kind enough to share a gorgeous detailed account of Clark and Carol's newlywed ranch. She said, quote, "The two-story white brick farmhouse was 13 years old. The stables were big enough for 10 horses, which fed on homegrown alfalfa and red oats. Beautiful orchards of oranges, lemons, peaches, figs, and apricots surrounded the house, while huge pepper and eucalyptus trees provided shade from the sun's rays in the hot valley," end quote. Carol put a lot of thought into the interior decor of the farmhouse. The couple always dressed for the evening and dined in their formal dining room, quote, "with its off-white beamed ceiling, natural pine walls, and oversized white brick fireplace," end quote. Elsewhere inside the home, quote, "in the sunny living room, the carpet and sofa were bright yellow. Other furniture added splashes of red and green," end quote. Okay, that might be a little much, but I am all for people decorating their homes in a way that makes them happy. Clark had a prized gun room, and the two had separate bedroom suites. Clark's, of course, was decorated very masculine, but Carol's was, quote, "a masterpiece of white and marble, with fur rugs, crystal chandeliers, floor-to-ceiling mirrors, and a four-poster bed," end quote. We'll talk a little more about the love between Clark Gable and Carol Lombard in a bit, but first it's time to talk about my favorite part of Clark Gable's life. Him playing Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind. Oh, I just love the character of Rhett Butler so much. Clark Gable, however, did not want to take on that role. Not at all. It was his new wife, Carol Lombard, who urged him to do it, So, thank you, Carol Lombard. Gary Cooper had turned down the role, later saying, quote, Gone with the Wind is going to be the biggest flop in Hollywood history. I'm glad it'll be Clark Gable falling flat on his nose, not me, end quote. Gary Cooper wasn't alone in his way of thinking. Such a huge deal was being made about the casting and pre-production of Gone with the Wind that many people thought the hype was all just too much and it was surely going to be a huge disaster. Boy, were they wrong. Actually, the casting of Gone with the Wind was a long and dramatic process, mostly for the role of Scarlett O'Hara, which of course went to Hollywood newcomer Vivien Leigh, but also with the other main roles. Producer David O. Selznick wanted nothing short of perfection with this film, and casting could make or break it. He had to pay very close attention to who he cast. Besides Gary Cooper, Ronald Colman and Errol Flynn were also considered for the part of Red Butler. And for Scarlett O'Hara, many actresses were considered before Selznick finally found Vivien Leigh. Or more like the other way around. Vivien Leigh was determined to get that part. But the others considered were Paulette Goddard, Katharine Hepburn, Betty Davis, Joan Bennett, Joan Crawford, Tallulah Bankhead, Jean Arthur, and even Lucille Ball. Susan Hayward and Lana Turner were just trying to get their toes in the big Hollywood waters when they tested for the part. Katharine Hepburn was just as determined to secure the role as Vivien Leigh was, saying to David O. Selznick, I am Scarlett O'Hara. The role is practically written for me. To which he replied to her, I can't imagine Rhett Butler chasing you for 12 years. And of course, Joan Crawford wanted to be Scarlett O'Hara for one reason and one reason alone, to be paired up again with Clark Gable. The on-screen romantic pairing of Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara remains one of the most iconic couples to ever grace the silver screen. And Gone with the Wind remains one of the most celebrated and successful movies ever made. 1939, when Gone with the Wind was released, actually went down in history for being an epic year in the advancement of Hollywood film production. Aside from Gone with the Wind, a few other iconic movies were released in 1939, including Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and The Wizard of Oz. The 1940 Academy Awards ceremony was quite the event, especially considering Hattie McDaniel made history for her Academy Award win. She became the first Black actor to win an Academy Award with her portrayal of Mammy in Gone with the Wind. If you haven't listened to my episode on Hattie McDaniel, her story is really remarkable, so please go back and listen to that. We should all know stories like hers. Gone with the Wind made history by winning 10 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. Clark Gable was nominated for Best Actor, but he didn't win. That Oscar went to Robert Donat for Goodbye, Mr. Chips, which shocked everyone. Either way, superstar Clark Gable was now a super superstar. This is where I'm going to leave off for today, and I'll be back next week with the conclusion of Clark Gable's story. Next week was scheduled to be no episode, a little summer break for me, but this works out well because now you get a little something. So, next week, more Clark Gable. Now it's time to read a review of the week. This review comes to us from Neely, who asked to hear about Clark Gable. Neely wrote, I really enjoy this podcast. It keeps me company on my drives. I appreciate how Aaron also integrates talking about childhood trauma. It can affect us for a lifetime. Thank you so much, Neely. And sadly, as I just kind of talked about, those words are so true. We see too much childhood trauma in these stories, including this one. So much, in fact, that it's surprising to not find some kind of childhood trauma in the stories while I'm doing my research. But a very pleasant surprise. Thanks so much for supporting the show, Neely. Don't forget to check out the show on Facebook and Instagram, and I would love it if you could give the show a positive rating and review where you listen to your podcasts. It really helps with discoverability. And discoverability helps make sure that the show will stick around for a long time. Another way to keep this show around for a while is to show a little support on Patreon, like Kristen just decided to do. For $8 a month, you can support the production of this little indie podcast, and I'll thank you by giving you some sweet bonus content in return. You'll get a monthly bonus episode, which covers some really interesting topics. And you get a movie of the month recap episode and a cocktail party episode, where I read some juicy vintage gossip from old publications and share a vintage cocktail recipe. Lots of fun stuff, so you should definitely consider checking it out. Oh, and if you sign up, you not only get all of the stuff going forward, but you get the entire backlog of bonus content too. If $8 a month is a little too steep in this expensive land we live in, there is also a $4 a month option where you get everything except for that full-length bonus episode. So you have options. Oh, and you'll also get a shout-out on a regular episode, and I will mail you a beautiful Stars of the Golden Age sticker. Come join us, I double dog dare you. Don't forget to tune in next week for the remainder of the story of Clark Gable. My primary source for this episode was a fantastic book titled Clark Gable, Portrait of a Misfit by Jane Ellen Wayne. I also used a book titled Gable and Lombard, a Biography by Warren G. Harris. A book titled American Legends, The Life of Clark Gable by Charles River Editors. The National Museum of the United States Air Force. A People Magazine article by Julie Tremaine from August 18, 2024. And IMDb.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply in-app only.